Songhyun Lee is a lecturer in the Department of Media Communications, Creative Arts, Language and Literature at Macquarie University. Her major research focus is on literature, film, and television drama of East Asia, with the particular attention to Korea. So her research centers on relationships between cultural ideologies in Asian societies and representational strategy. So I got to know her through her paper. She wrote this very interesting papers on Korean zombies in the screen. So I actually made my students to read the paper in my class. So here, the second.
Thank you. Actually, this is not my major field. Can you hear me? Okay. Yeah. So maybe you know better than me, but I'll try. So OTT, over the top platforms, particularly Netflix, has had a transformative influence on Korean TV dramas. Even before Netflix's entry into the country in 2016. Okay. Something's wrong here. Oh, that's all right. Yeah. Korea's drama production capabilities were quite well known. However, the level of drama production, such as process standardization and contract systematization, has not increased. So, in that sense, Netflix is leading positive changes in the Korean drama industry through original content production. Netflix's drama production method is very different from the existing Korean drama production, as seen in the table. So it's really small, right? But I'll go through it as I talk, okay? There are many differences between pre-production, production, and post-production. You can see differences in work selection criteria, top actor preferences, rights, production costs, videos, product placement, and so on. So you can see that Korean domestic dramas prefer the famous actors, but in Netflix, they are concentrating on stories and things like this, so that it's really quite nice comparison. And then the Korean drama produced by Netflix are broadly divided into two categories. Netflix original, a drama exclusively available on Netflix, tackles sensitive topics that are challenging to air in Korea. Kingdom and extracurricular. Exemplary dramas. And for instance, Kim Eun-hee, a playwright who wrote the script of Kingdom, recalled some violent scenes in the series, such as beheading characters, would not be possible without Netflix because broadcasters would refuse to air them when she initially mapped out the series in 2016. Also, Yoon Shin-hye, the producer of Extracurricular, noted that Netflix would provide opportunities for producers to try new approaches to diversify television genres. Korea's first original series, Kingdom, which premiered in 2019, was a massive international hit for its production company, A-Story. The historical supernatural thriller deals with class inequality, political struggles, and zombies. A second season was on air in 2020 as a Netflix original. Extracurricular deals with teenage prostitution and pimping. In other words, a strong story that is challenging to find on terrestrial broadcasters is preferred. Extracurricular and Glitch. Oh, no, sorry. I'm not used to using this actually. Glitch. Or both written by Jin Han-se. Do you know who Song Jin-ah is? Song Jin-ah is very famous. He's her son, okay. Jin Han-se, and produced for Netflix by Yoon Shin-hye's studio 329. Both series are marked by genre fluidity, which is exploited by writer and director alike. Glitch, for example, shifts amongst thrillers, mystery, and comedy while incorporating sci-fi motifs. Such a series challenges the idea that understanding of a TV text is grounded in genre. So in Netflix originals, Netflix dramas, they are looking at the target audience through genres, but in Korean dramas, it's age. Okay, so that's a difference. The content of the series is similarly diverse and invites multiple audience interpretations, which are perhaps linked by a core presentation of intersubjective relations and a quest for self-identity. Okay, so I'll just play just a little bit of a clip from here, from Glitch. And then we'll briefly talk about it.
Glitch is a 2022 Korean sci-fi drama about a cute lesbian couple who investigate a UFO cult. Together, they go on a wild adventure in search for aliens, break into rooms with bisexual lighting, and risk their lives to save each other. Or maybe they are just friends and not a couple? The queer coding is subtle enough for straight audiences not to pick up on, but at the same time to queer audiences, the romance is incredibly obvious. Let's take a closer look. Jiyo, our main character, is in a boring relationship with her boyfriend, Shiguk. As soon as someone brings up marriage, she starts hallucinating aliens. After her boyfriend asks her to move in together, she has a full-on psychotic episode. Jiyo clearly doesn't want to get married to this man and feels a lot of pressure. Luckily, she takes the hint from her subconscious and breaks up with him. They actually break up twice, in the first and then again in the last episode. There is another potential male love interest in the story, a police officer. But Jiyo never catches on to the fact that he is into her. Does she even like men? Her best friend seems jealous when she finds out the cop wants to date Jiyo and joins him in his investigation. Is she trying to prevent them from getting closer? She also keeps telling people that she and Jiyo are soulmates. It is mentioned how she started acting like a jealous ex-girlfriend when Jiyo started dating Shiguk. Jiyo tells her therapist about it, but doesn't say that her boyfriend asked her to move in together. She also tells him about her obsession with Bora, but forgets to mention that her boyfriend went missing. Jiyo's relationships with men are detached, but her relationships with women seem quite intense. The other main character in this story is Bora, Jiyo's former classmate. Bora mentions that she was bullied in middle school because everyone thought that the two of them dated. In the same conversation, Bora also adds that she got kicked out from home and her parents don't talk to her anymore. Was she disowned for being gay? By the way, did you notice that Bora has a tattoo on her left arm that says out? Out as in out of the closet? She's dressed very differently from the typical K-drama female lead. Usually, they wear light colors, feminine silhouettes, and have a very soft minimalist look. But Bora's style is more alternative and edgy. She has tattoos, wears funky jewelry, oversized vintage jackets, graphic shirts, and combat boots. Her style is most similar to other queer-coded female characters from Korean shows. Bora's outfits remind me of Yuna from Semantic Error, who is openly bisexual, and Sar from Nevertheless, who is a lesbian.
Okay. So I'll just start here. Did you notice that she starts with, the voiceover starts with, they are lesbians? So that's what I mean by multiple interpretations are here. I never thought it was a lesbian relationship. What they say is holding hands together. But in Korean culture, it's quite common. I don't know whether they changed now, but it's a girls are more closer, they hold hands, hugs, and things like that. So, I don't know, maybe because of the same in China, right? It's the same. So, it depends on the, and then queer means, queer is not really a narrow kind of sense, right? Only lesbian or some kind of thing, but queer means other, different. So, it's broader meaning. That's what I thought. So, it's just a small example, okay? Right. And then, the creative freedom assigned to production companies by Netflix's policy of non-interference in creative decisions, flexibility in the number and length of episodes, and preference for unconventional approaches to storytelling has also led to an unsettling of the narrative techniques and practices that have been the norm in Korean TV drama. Okay, so I'll go through it later if I missed some of these things, okay? Oh, sorry. Made a mistake again. So, on the other hand, Netflix's content tends to favor melodrama with a diverse and vibrant cast. So we're talking about Netflix original, and the other one is they are purchasing. Is they are looking always what is going to be popular. Okay, they purchase content aired on domestic terrestrial broadcasters, comprehensive channels, and cable channels. So I think domestic terrestrial broadcasters are maybe KBS, NBC, and SBS, and then the comprehensive channels are JTBC, TV, Joseon, MB, something, right? And then the cable channels are TVN, and so those things. They provide non-exclusive online services domestically and distribute exclusively overseas. Examples are Crash Landing on You, that's TVN and purchased. And then an Itaewon Class, JTBC. JTBC is a branch of, they have a branch of Jungang Daily Newspaper that's very powerful. And also they are having some alliance with J Entertainment, JC Entertainment, or ENM. Okay, so in the case of originals, they look for something unique. And in the case of purchases, they seem to choose cast and melodrama stories that are likely to be popular in the Asian market, especially. And then Netflix makes it possible to produce blockbuster Korean dramas by either purchasing high-cost productions from Korea or producing them in-house. After the great success of Winter Sonata, Winter Sonata 2002, actually, and then Japan made intensive investments. However, in 2012, the Dokdo issue arose and Korea experienced a recession. The whole industry. Subsequently, films like My Love from the Star and Descendants of the Sun, gained immense popularity in China, resulting in significant investments. But due to the rapid deterioration of relations with China, following the deployment of THAAD in 2016, the smooth export of dramas has not yet occurred. So in this situation, Netflix has made it possible to produce major Korean dramas. The production cost, which was around 400 million won per drama episode in 2016, when Netflix entered the market, rose to an average of 800 million, so almost twice in 2020. So it's almost about 4 years. The sale of licenses is significant in terms of global supply and contributes to a stable production environment. However, original production faces numerous restrictions that are not acceptable for terrestrial broadcasting. Therefore, it is essential to cater to the diverse needs of viewers. It's the only way to do it. Okay. And then while existing dramas were typically produced in 16 episodes or 20 sometimes, Netflix's original productions have a flexible number of episodes that are tailored to the story. If these shows receive a positive response, they are produced in seasons, similar to the United States. Netflix original content typically consists of 6 to 12 episodes, and they have produced season 2 of Kingdom and Love Alarm here, and then season 1 and 2, and then at the bottom, it's My First Love. 2019. So there is no time limit for editing each episode. The advantage is that viewers can freely choose when to watch without being limited by editing schedules. In addition, traditional broadcast dramas typically employ cliffhangers at the end of even numbered episodes to pique viewers' curiosity and keep them eagerly awaiting the next week's installment. So this practice aligns with the standard of broadcasting twice a week. However, Netflix with a binge-watching model does not rely on cliffhangers in the same way. Rather, it has a skip ending function where you can skip the ending credits and go on to the next episode straight away. Or maybe they have a beginning function, open ending, open function too, actually, opening function. Then the high quality drama video. Okay, so currently production costs and production times are increasing to produce dramas in high quality UHD. So UHD means ultra high definition. I think it was four times higher definition, right? So this is the next stage up from HD and offers consumers high quality pictures and a more immersive viewing experience. UHD is four times the resolution of HD, so pixels and things like that, right? And then sometimes it's regarded as the same as 4K. K means a kilo, so 4,000 refers to a television with 4,000 pixels on a horizontal display basis. Netflix uses 4K or higher. Okay, so due to the higher production costs and longer production time, there are not many Korean domestic dramas produced in UHD. However, from the beginning, Netflix has placed great importance on the quality of video and audio. So by applying such production standards when producing Korean dramas, the quality of Korean dramas was able to increase. So it means they are looking at 50 years, something like that. So that's good. And then the other one is simultaneous global distribution. The advantage of distributing dramas through Netflix is that they can be distributed to over 190 countries around the world. So according to Flix Patrol, an organization that complies rankings of films and TV shows announced by Netflix, TVN, cable TV, is ranked 9th in the global top 100 as of November 2020. It has also been ranked in 33 countries for 30 days. Previously, it was not possible to produce such statistics, but Netflix has made it possible to understand the current situation. And then Flix Patrol actually gathers all possible streaming data about films and TV shows to help producers better understand viewers' taste. Then being able to supply to over 190 countries within a short period of time is a significant advantage. So it eliminates the need for the complex process of selling products based on specific conditions in each region. And then the other one is the systematic production process. Okay, Netflix is actively involving stakeholders in the production process. For Korean domestic dramas, only a select few individuals, such as the director and editor, have access to the filmed footage. However, in the case of Netflix dramas, the footage is shared daily with all parties involved after each day of filming. So what they say is Netflix specializes in post-production processes and has a really robust feedback system for edited versions compared to Korea. They respect their partners more. Okay. And then next thing is, so far it was really good advantages that the Netflix have on Korean drama industry, but this is a negative one. Although Netflix has had a positive impact on the Korean domestic drama industry, it also has a negative side. There are concerns that Korean production companies may become overly reliant on Netflix and end up working as subcontractors, just like outsourcing, right? So additionally, there are negative aspects such as Netflix owing all copyrights and a significant rise in production costs. The other one is a structure without additional profit distribution. So in the field of drama production, the main complaint raised by production companies against broadcasting companies is that they relinquish copyright to the broadcasting companies despite being responsible for all planning and production. Of course, there are also structures in which a certain portion of domestic and overseas sales profits are distributed over a specific period of time, or where the production company retains all rights while the broadcaster only holds the broadcasting rights. But Netflix goes further than this. In the case of Netflix originals, the principle is applied to that Netflix owns all rights. And even in the case of purchase, the right to access the service indefinitely is requested. From the perspective of the production company, even if they produce excellent content, there are no additional profit beyond the profit margin, which is approximately 15% of the total production cost. Korean content is receiving excellent reviews, not only in the global market through Netflix, but also on Southeast Asian platforms. And then it's very meaningful that the Disney Plus, HBO Max, and Apple TV Plus and so on, they were actually entered the Korean market in 2021. Okay, so and as an example, I gave you this table here. Squid Game raised Netflix's internal value by some $900 million. The director Hwang Dong-hyuk, however, forfeited all intellectual property rights and received no residuals. So he didn't have any money. Okay. In short, Squid Game belongs to Netflix. Okay. Hwang's story was used to illustrate a broader trend in which Netflix has profited from Korean dramas while the creators make very little. I was going to say, for example, summary, copyright not recognized, right? Then increase in production costs. For example, if you can see, Squid Game was only $2.4 million, and then Stranger Things, $8 million US, and then The Crown is $10 million per episode. Okay? So you can see the difference there, right? Almost twice, three times something. Okay. What they did was, again, because of these quality and then longer time, things like that, it become very more expensive. So the production costs up. So maybe they are worried about that. And then I was going to summarize what I did, but you know that. So the other one is the last thing was, this is increased production costs. Like, for example, 54 billion won or something like that, Kingdom 35 billion. But it used to be one third. And then compared to the production with other American companies or something else, but with Korean companies, it's only one tenth the cost, the production costs. So it's very economical, right? It sounds really like outsourcing, okay, everything. And then the other thing is, and then they make it really secret. You're not supposed to divulge the exact kind of amount of money. So for me, it is really, really hard to find the statistics. And then I have to tell you, I'm not sure about these issues. But what they are arguing is maybe over 10 years, these production costs became about three times higher than original. Okay, thank you so much.